crews to make sure that they're actually doing some kind of cleanup. I think you need to learn to listen to industry rhetoric for what it is, and when you hear them giving you assumptions on long-term impacts, go out and get an independent observation. I've got plenty of information on all of these issues available to you, and I'm at your disposal. Thank you.
The next person would be Bill Harden.
Excuse me, Mr. Harden, before you begin, I'd just like to say to Ms. Liebenson, if you would please forward those materials to us, we would appreciate it. And I would remind anybody listening on the network or in the teleconference, if you have materials that you would like to have the committee look at, or if you have suggestions that you'd like to send us, please don't hesitate to do so. Please continue, Mr. Harden.
Okay, my name is Holton, Bill Holton, and anyway, I fielded a call today from a newspaper reporter from the San Francisco area, and he said Wally Hickel was in the San Francisco Bay Area speaking at a luncheon before a group of local business people. He told the group that the Prince William Sound would return to its pristine form after a year with a winter season in nature doing most of the cleanup, and the reporter asked me if I thought this was true and whether or not I thought the common people of Alaska thought this, and I think definitely we don't think that the cleanup is going to be done by nature in just a year. So anyway, I want to talk about Bristol Bay and House Joint Resolution 32. I think it's a good resolution. I'm really proud of the state legislature's work in getting this thing passed through the House and the Senate. I think that's probably where it is now. Back to the House or something. Anyway, I just want to say that this oil and gas lease the state is offering on the Alaska Peninsula 56, lease 56, has got to go. We've got a little bit of a show Congress, George Bush, and Manuel Lujan that we mean business, and I think the part in the resolution that says we have to delay oil and gas leasing in adjacent state waters. That's not enough, and we need to get rid of that state lease 56 and really show them that we mean business. And I also want to point out that 67A, the lease here around Anchorage, that's in Kenai Borough, Mesa Borough, Anchorage, Cook Inlet, Knick Arm, Kennedy Arm, we need to see another public hearing on that. And I talked to Pam Rogers, the lease manager. She said to try and get the municipality or one of the boroughs to put on public hearings, but I think it's the Division of Oil and Gas's job to see that we get another public hearing. And all I can say is I think the legislature is doing a pretty good job here. I also recommend a special session to deal with the oil spill and make sure that this thing is straightened out and we see some better legislation in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Holton. Appreciate your remarks. Mr. Gary Catt, please come forward with your remarks.
The next person would be Lou Scott. I'm sorry, Lee Scott.
Yes, my name is Lee Scott, and I've been a resident here in Alaska for 43 years. We all are aware of the terrible tragedy. However, I do feel that the news media had overplayed the oil coverage much too long. This news affects the people around the world, and they picture Alaska as being messy with oil and that the hotels and the motels are crowded with the media and with their news, and they're starting to shy away and have cancellations. I feel the media should be covering that there are cities in Alaska that are still beautiful and have not been affected by the oil spill, and to encourage people to come to Alaska. I also figure the pointing of the fingers must stop. We are all at fault at this. Exxon should be barred from the Alaska water if possible. The reason why I say this is because Exxon's captain of the barge did have a previous drinking problem, and piloting a barge is a boring job and very acceptable to drinking and also drugs, and also Exxon knew this before that they had hired him. To stop Amor oil sales and also the oil pipeline and so forth, I think this is foolish. I don't think this is the answer, and I think it would be a very foolish move to do this. I would also like to recommend that we do have a special tax, an oil tax that
Ms. Scott. Ms. Sharon Cisna, please.
Yes, my name is Sharon Cisna. I'm a 22-year resident of the state, and I've been self-employed for the past 16 years. I represent a group called Alaskan Council of the Concerned, a group which formed days after the oil spill in March to generate a public meeting which we had hoped would be called by the governor or the legislature, using the immediacy of the spill to generate a goal of prevention of future spills, adequate response to oil spills, and adequate enforcement of all rules and regulations. We continue to work towards a statewide town meeting forum, utilizing the thousands of Alaskans who continue to express concern that a disaster and disaster response of this magnitude never happen again. One way such a town meeting program could occur, a plan which would truly involve the people most affected by this kind of disaster, would be the appointment of an independent commission, a commission that would consist of respected, credible Alaskans with long records of resource management. This commission would examine development of Alaskan resources and ways to ensure that development not jeopardize the renewable resources of the state. Integral in this examination would be town meetings held throughout Alaska. I personally join with others who ask for careful examination of the legislation to protect our resources against oil spill and other hazardous waste accidents, and to avoid rapid passage of bills being considered. We must come up with ironclad legislation, then fund it properly, and the people of this state must be involved in that process. And last, I would like to thank you for holding this hearing. There is throughout the state incredible commitment, and there is wonderful talent of people throughout the state, and it's good to have this opportunity to hear those people, and it would be good to have future opportunities as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cessna. Craig Leather, are you there, please?
Yes, I am. The last name is pronounced Luthe. It's spelled L-E-U-T-H-E. I'm a 20-year Anchorage resident, and I have a few remarks here that are directed mainly at the planning for future spills, assuming that there will be them because of human error, and for the equipment capabilities to handle such things. And I think we should develop an attitude that the Exxon Valdez was a normal size spill, nothing large and nothing that couldn't be handled. First of all, I think all tankers plying Alaskan waters should have the capability, or should have on board at least 30,000 feet of boom, which they can deploy with their own motor launches on board. This would in no way mean that there would not be additional boom, and I'm thinking of something in the neighborhood of 100,000 feet of boom in each major oil port in the state. Also, the Port of Valdez should have a station there and home porting of vessels that would be typical or similar to the Russian skimmer, which would have a capability of scooping at least 200,000 gallons per hour and a holding capacity of at least 2.5 million gallons. I think also that the state of Alaska, since we have a vested interest now in oil cleanup technology, should award an annual prize to any individual who is not working for an oil company that creates or invents the best item for the control of oil for the control of an oil spill. And this prize, of course, would be awarded annually. This prize would be administered by a committee appointed by the governor. It shall be advertised worldwide and available to citizens of any country. I hope that in time this prize would have the stature of the Nobel Prize or possibly the Pulitzer Prize. As an example, the types of items or technology that should come out of such a competition would be sort of as follows. Absorbent material that can be deployed by a National Guard or a civilian aircraft. Absorbent material in the shape of bombs that can be dropped from military bombers. I often wonder what would have happened or what the cleanup effort would have looked like had the following morning after the spill B-52's been able to have been launched from Nebraska that could have been could have dropped oil absorbent bombs. We have bombs for everything else. We should have anti-oil bombs. I also think another item might be nest trawls or booms that can be pulled by small fishing boats, so that Alaska's mosquito fleet could get out there and really do some good. Pumps and skimmers nozzles that could be adapted or designed for small fishing boats also, so that fishing boats could be used. And this is only a brief list of my own. The idea of this prize would be to challenge the best minds of the world towards creating something that would be truly a good cause. And I think that our National Guard should be trained in oil spill cleanup and oil spill technology. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Luthi. We're going to go next to Homer, and then Nikiski, and then Soldatna, and then we'll come back to Anchorage. So with that, would you please, Ms. Barbara Munt and Homer, are you there, and would you like to testify now, please?
Good evening. I've been an Alaska resident for 9 years. I've done commercial fishing. I've done tourism. I'm presently living in Homer, hoping to open up a tourism business first of May, but we don't think this is going to happen. Right now, we're kind of hoping it will, but the way things look, we don't know. I'm down here in regards to the bad publicity that we are receiving down in the lower 48, not only in the newspapers, but in the TV programming. A week ago Monday, on the Johnny Carson show, there was a monologue done in regards to the black, a gooey substance pouring into a bowl, referring to Alaskan chowder, consisting of dead birds and animals. Now, I mean, they've done some bad, publicity against our seafood and everything that's going on up here, but it seems like that we're taking a stab, and Exxon isn't getting quite the news coverage that way that I feel that they should get. I'd like to also know, it seems that, we've got a lot of questions arising to, what has Exxon done and what is Exxon doing. I'd like to know just what their background and track record has been. I understand that the state of Louisiana, has fined Exxon $135,000 for improperly handling an oil spill cleanup on the Mississippi River that occurred on September 1st. I'd just like to know just how much more is out there that we don't know about that is being kept hush. I personally feel that we should run that oil across the land. If we're going to have to put up with it up here, let's get it out of the water, because we know it's going to happen again and again, and we're the only ones that can handle what's going to happen with it. If we don't do something now, we might as well just sit back and say, well, we let it happen again. That's my personal feeling. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Munt. Ms. Roberta Hyland, please.
My name is Roberta Hyland, and I have some strong concerns, of course, regarding the oil industry and the oil spill. Many of them have been mentioned, but I'm going to mention some of them again. We obviously need an improved disaster plan. We've still not seen true competence in dealing with the spill, and it's been a month. This is inexcusable and unacceptable. I'm really wondering why we are allowing these super tankers in a fragile environment when there isn't even the technology invented to contain a spill of this size. And why are we allowing tankers to carry more oil than we can logistically clean up? I'm wondering why the state of Alaska doesn't have its own disaster plan ready to activate. Right. After all, it is our own home and we must protect ourselves. Is the long-term potential damage to our environment and fishing industry and tourism worth the gamble of what in the long range will be considered a short-term non-renewable oil revenue? Why aren't some plans in works for an overland pipeline? I personally feel the gamble with our environment is not worth it. I believe it is time we Americans realize abuse and overuse of our non-renewable resources cannot go on. Oil is going to have to run out someday, and it is not known if our planet can tolerate the continued pollution from the use of petroleum products. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hyland. Ms. Julie Cesarini, please.
Poor God.
I'm
I haven't listened to a previous testimony, but I am in favor of possibly closing down the pipeline because of various reasons. If it is safe, if it needs to be had a thorough renovation, and if we've been really late, I feel people have been really late, Exxon, and whoever else could put pressure on Exxon. The grassroots has not have been otherwise employed in their busyness dealing with this thing, and now it's tragic. I have great compassion for these people at Fort Graham who are fishing oil out of their water. I also believe there should be a bounty on oil proportional to the effort that it takes to fish that oil out of the water by whatever means possible, get out of the water and contained, dealt with as fast as possible. That's my basic message, and however you want to apply that to the appropriate legislation, I certainly would appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Cesarini. Next, I go to Nikiski and then Craig. Ms. Catherine Thomas in Nikiski, please.
This is Catherine Thomas.
Please continue with your testimony, Ms. Thomas.
Thank you. Hey, in my business, I'm talking to several people outside of Alaska every day. I'm real concerned with the outspoken criticism our state government and officials are giving us right now. That's being repeated back to me on a daily basis. And I think perhaps we could approach this from the standpoint that we're taking care of this and we're going to do what we can to handle this cleanup and support the cleanup efforts a little more openly to the public. I think that we're going to affect our tourism and our fishing for years to come if we don't change our attitude. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. Next, I'd like to go to Craig, Alaska. We do not have a name there, but I understand there is someone there who would like to testify. Craig, Alaska, would you come in, please?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, please continue. If you would, state your name for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Barney Wolstad. I am a lifelong Alaskan. We've received many benefits here in the state from oil. However, I would like you to consider a bill which would require that actual oil spill drills, just as schools hold fire drills, be held. Before the disaster, apparently they did hold a spill drill, but it was held only on paper. I feel that the state should require Alyeska and companies operating in Cook Inlet and Prince William Sound to hold annual or semi-annual spill drills. This would consist of placing a state vessel. We have several in the state that are 100 foot or larger. Anyway, placing a state vessel somewhere unannounced in Cook Inlet, Prince William Sound, or near Kodiak. Alyeska would then have to respond to the, quote, spill with actual response of men and booms. The boat would then be boomed and the time of response noted. If the response did not meet the specific guidelines, then Alyeska should be fined $100,000 to $500,000. And a drill would be scheduled again later until they do actually pass the test. This spill test should be required of any company or group that is shipping oil in tankers in our state waters. I do not support oil exploration in Bristol Bay, but I do support ANWR exploration. One's on land, one's in the water. It's separate items. I think the state should look into continual background checks on skippers or the captains. We require background checks for daycare workers. I think you should consider the special session. Regarding the spill fund, the tax for a spill fund, I think this should bear consideration. We have property up there around Homer. If the oil was to hit our beach, we may have trouble proving that oil has actually hit our beach. From what I understand, the oil is washing in and out of beaches now. But I may not want to eat the clams on my beach unless I know they've been tested. Or not the oil companies would test them, I don't know. So this is a case where the state may need to have a spill fund where they could do this type of stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holstead. Next, I'd like to come here to Juno. We have a couple of people who would like to testify. If you would, please state your name for the record, Alex.
Hello, my name is Juno Hoffman. I'm Mr. Chairman. My name is Alex Shadora. I am from the Kenai Peninsula. I'm here representing the Cook Inlet Fishermen's Fund, whose headquarters at Nanilchik, and its president is Doug Blossom. My particular interest tonight is because of a telefax that's come to the legislature at about 5 o'clock tonight from the village of Port Grain. It's their resolution 89-9, which I've handed out copies to all the members. I was really upset. I would like to say here that for those people out in the area, that tonight you have not only the committee here, but you have the Lieutenant Governor listening in, and the former Senator from Homer, Yul Kilcher, who is a member of the Resources Committee of the Senate. They are practically begging to get some help, materials, so they can stop the movement of oil into those bays. And I think it can be worked out, because that material that can be used in some of the quieter waters, not in the open waters, is available from the timber and possibly the straw from Homer and the Matsu Valley. You're talking about an absorbent material that makes a good dam is the straw itself. The combination of timber and straw could be utilized there and could be helpful. And it seems that what appears to me, there is no leadership, no coordination, no one individual agency of the government can do it. DEC can't do it by itself. The Habitat Division of the Fisheries can't do it. Then what they need is a coordinator that will coordinate with the oil industry and the agencies of the state, who knows what he's doing and really get the thing done. This is really almost stupidity to have something like this has happened 3 weeks ago and nothing has been accomplished as far as the village of Port Grain. We're concerned, the Fisherman's Fund is concerned with all the activities on the inlet. I'm a former president of the Fishermen's Council of the five groups in Cook Inlet. I think we should recognize, and I don't want to read this thing, it's quite lengthy, but you should consider it in your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shadura. Next, I'd like to go to Soltotna and hear from Carol Berg, please.
I'm Carol Berg. I'm representing a 12-year sport fishing lodge on the Kenai Peninsula, and we have three lodges and have been spending several months of our winter time promoting our business and inviting clients to come up and visiting Anchorage and up to Denali Park and then moving their way up to the Kenai Peninsula. We're fishing for king salmon and out of Homer and in the Cook Inlet for halibut. Our phones have virtually quit ringing for any new reservations. We've had tremendous calls for cancellations and prospective cancellations waiting to hear what the next word's going to be from the media, which has been pretty devastating real lately. And we're deeply concerned about that, as well as I'm sure you are for the tourism for Alaska. I'm not sure what the answers are there. I think perhaps a little less dramatization of what the problem is and where it's moving into, and a little more factual consideration, I think, would probably be in the best interest of everyone that's involved in the Homer and Cook Inlet and Kenai Peninsula area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else there in Soldotna who wishes to testify at this time?
We have one other to testify.
If you would, please state your name for the record and continue.
My name is Kathy Kelly, and I'm a resident of the peninsula. Most of the issues that are running through my mind at the moment is that I have a number of concerns of what's going on, and they are perhaps more directed at the federal government, but may also pertain all of us on some personal borough, state, or federal level. It starts with the confusion over cleanup and containment that has been a source of frustration for me. The establishment of clear chain of command that identifies and directs through all available information and recommendations Exxon's cleanup and containment efforts. Whose clear objective is to clean and protect Alaska's land, water, and animals. A direct and orderly operation that takes advantage of available resources, including manpower and money, without the ongoing waste and confusion that I continue to see. 10,000 feet of locally made booms sitting on the Homer Spit is a good example of wasted resources. So why aren't they used? There's a real need to protect anything, Kodiak, Kachemak Bay, Cook Inlet, that we possibly can, that may be in the path of the oncoming oil. If that direction and control is to be from the U.S. Coast Guard, then I hope that action takes place with considerable input from local communities and agencies. It is imperative that these people be heard. Local communities may have some very constructive and positive input in situations that the powers to be may not be aware of. We'll be the ones that have to live with it when everyone goes home and the cleanup is done. To take charge, be effective, direct, and monitor Exxon's cleanup and containment that can act immediately and appropriately should a situation arise. The oil is here now, and the longer it takes to clean it up or contain it, the more damage it creates. A system to monitor the oil cleanup needs to be set up. Again, it's easy to say on paper that cleanup can be done by September of this year, but guidelines, goals, and milestones, as in any construction schedule, needs to be set up and met. If they aren't, it is even less likely that the cleanup will be complete on time. It would be unacceptable to get to September 1st and realize we can't get this done by winter. As for the near future, we need to continue with legislation to ensure enforcement that requires industry to protect the environment and people from hazardous waste and requires equipment and manpower on hand to contain spills, not just on paper, but in reality, real contingency plans that work with state on-site inspections of equipment and manpower to ensure feasibility through any committee or any other informational body that may be available in the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to go back to Anchorage and Miss Avita. I have Nitcher, says that Richards. Avita?
Yes. For the record, my name is Everett Richards. I've been in Alaska since 1962. Presently, I'm the Emergency Medical Services Coordinator and Village Public Safety Officer Coordinator for the Prince William Sound area and the two native villages in Kachemak Bay. First thing I would like to address is the person's comment about disaster planning, which I deem is very critical to any kind of cleanup operation. I was the president of the Homer Volunteer Fire Department when the Ryanair crash happened in 87. The only reason that worked so well for us, at least the rescue worked so well, is we had a disaster plan. We had practiced it every year, and things went very smoothly. You can't do this on paper. You can only learn from experience. So spills should be mandated, or I should say spill cleanups should be mandated, at least the practice of that. What I want to address is VECO's hiring policies in the native villages. They have gone into the villages, hired some people, not hired others. This has caused rifts within the villages. Also, they've hired people from one village and not another. This has caused problems between villages. I think this is a designed problem by them. It's an example of divide and conquer. I have no illusions about Exxon's good intentions. I've seen on TV the CEO from Exxon come out with direct lies, things I've seen that he has said that were true that are not true. I've seen the vice president of Exxon lie. And they have no credibility with me. One of the things we should do as Alaskans is counter this media blitz of lies and misinformation. We have $10 billion in our reserve account. I think we should use some of those monies to counter the misinformation Exxon is putting out. What they're trying to do is to put the people of the United States at ease, thinking that Exxon is doing everything, that the spill is being done, and everything's okay. We should counter that. Some other things is they are limiting access to us for very sensitive areas. There have been, the Urbico employees have been observed for sinking bagfuls of dead sea otters so that the body counts are lower. They have been seen putting the dead sea otters in bags with rags in them so that they're not counted. But the only thing that Exxon really can contain seems to be the truth. Now, I'd like to see Mr. Hazelwood brought to Alaska and charged with violation of the fish and game ordinances concerning destruction of sea otters. If I, as a private citizen, was to go out and kill one, I would be taken to task for that. I think he should be taken for task. As a private citizen, if I was to kill a moose out of season, my weapon, my airplane, everything I used for that would be confiscated. I think the state of Alaska should confiscate the Exxon Valdez and send it to Japan for scrap. Let's do to them what we do to ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Richards. Mr. Charles Koenigsberg, please.
My name is Charles Koenigsberg. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, we do. Please continue.
Okay. I feel the pain of the Prince William Sound spill within my heart, my mind, my psyche, the emotional dimension of my body, and every other conceivable way we can experience something. I am sick to the marrow of my bones of people who think that you can separate the one from the other, who decry emotionalism. These are the kinds of people whose mind and hearts reside in their wallets, and who upon reaching the point of dying will realize they never lived. And I trust you will not listen to such people. I trust you will not listen to such people who talk about scientific and technological expertise. And if you form a commission, make sure you have people on it, human beings. Because the Earth was sick, is sick, from the work of experts who have dominated our lives for at least the last 150 years. I want to reiterate the recommendations of those who cry for a special session. Use the rest of the record session to clear out all the other business, and call a special session, perhaps no earlier than early or mid-fall. Give us time. One thing you should do before this session closes is to be sure you fund the DEC adequately for all its needs for inspection and protection. I ask myself, was it worth it then? One of the things we have to understand about this bill is it tells us petroleum is not merely the source of energy, it's a poison. It's a broad-spectrum, all-embracing poison delivered to us by the men in gray flannel and white collars. It is a poison nevertheless. And I think what it tells us is that you have to decide what you want. Poison, or you want the kind of Alaska that so many of us came here to live in and enjoy, unattended by the ills of industrial technological society. Catastrophe serves the function of telling us what is fundamental in our lives and what is unessential. Let's learn that from this bill. Let's learn that cultural and ecological integrity should take the first rank, the highest priority, in the deliberations of the legislature and in all public officials. And that we do not trust men of the industry who have proven that they do not have the right to our confidence. You cannot believe what they tell you. They are presently trying their well-practiced expertise of divide and conquer in all the communities in which they are operating, and you have heard the details from those who observed it. Divide and conquer, and all concentrated power will win out. We knew that was going to happen in the late 60s and early 70s, and we were dumb enough to fall for it. Let's not do it again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Koenigsberg. Next we have Ann Wieland, please.
Yes, my name is Ann Wieland, and I look back wistfully to the years before the earthquake, the way life was in Alaska then. Like Mr. Eagleson from Valdez, I've been working in the Anchorage, oil spill volunteer response center from just a few days after the oil spill, and by now we've received calls from probably over 1,500 callers, some of them representing thousands of people, actually, from all over the United States, Canada, and quite a number of countries in Europe. And these people are despondent. Many of them are very angry. They're depressed, and they would like nothing more than to drop whatever they're doing and come up here, paying their own way, as in the case of some who have already come, and do whatever they can to help out. They're very frustrated that they can't. And I would like to ask you to, in some way, facilitate bringing some of these people up here to the larger communities that have been named, and also to some of the smaller ones in the Sound and also in the Kachemak Bay area, to serve as witnesses, to be able to go back and tell the folks how it was and give them a lesson in geography so that they can, in fact, tell the places where the oil is not as well as where the oil is. Many of these callers have made the connection between the planet's thirst for petroleum, our nation and other nations, and this oil spill. And they're looking to us to lead them in ways of how we can make substantial changes in the utilization of these resources. And some of the ways that we can do things like increasing opportunities for recycling, alternate energy sources, energy conservation, greater opportunities for the use of public transportation, carpooling, cutting down on the volume of solid waste, incentives for generation of smaller volume of garbage. There were about 4 bags per household this morning on M Street in Anchorage. Considering a ban on non-biodegradable plastics like they're doing in Minneapolis right now. And so we'd like to ask you to sponsor some workshops that the general public can attend to educate ourselves about the changes that we can make so that we can curtail our waste of petroleum products and the depletion of other resources. Third of all, we've heard again and again a cry from people around Seward and from people all over to help expedite starting a second otter rescue center in Seward and seeing that there's enough vessels going out and enabled to collect those otters. Thank you.
It will be Michael Tomey.
Okay, Michael Tomey, please continue.
Yes, my name's Mike Tomey. Charles Dickens wrote A Tale of Two Cities, which was an account of the events leading up to the French Revolution and the overthrow of the French hierarchy. One of the leading characters was a conspirator named Madame Defarge, who wove the names of the citizens' enemies into a tapestry to be used on the day of revolution. Those who care about the unspoiled land, sea, and air resources, weave the names of our betrayers into your memories, for I pray the day of retribution is near.
We ask Scott Siemens.
Please continue, Mr. Siemens.
My name is Scott Siemens. I've lived in the late Prince William Sound. The place where I used to live is in the dead zone. I know it can't be clean. I feel there should be no leasing in Bristol Bay, Kachemak Bay, Cook Inlet, or any of the Alaskan waters. I'd like to see zero tolerance for crude oil on the water. That would mean seizure of ships for an ounce of crude in the harbor. It would mean auctioning the ship and cargo for cash, and with the help of the Coast Guard, the same kind of enforcement on the high seas. Health is being misapplied. It should be repealed and paid back. Lastly, we know there's a great quantity of oil in the Anwar and offshore up there. It should stay there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seaman. Is Ken Griffin there, please?
No, sir. We're kind of going right along. The next one is Beth Phillips.
Okay, we'll hear from Ms. Phillips, and then we'll go over to Homer. And we have one more person here in Juneau, and then we'll come back to Anchorage. Ms. Phillips, please.
Hello, my name is Beth Phillips, and recently I've taken the time to review some of the contingency plans that have been approved by the DEC and some of the regulations that that control them. And I've also looked at some of the bills that are before you right now, and I'd like to make a few suggestions. One is that the operators should be required to go through practice drills of their contingency operations in the past. Regulations required them only to, the DEC to only conduct a maximum of two a year. There was no minimum, so there was no requirement that any drills be conducted, and they, the operators had to be given notice before the drills were conducted, which is not a realistic scenario. HB 288 does not have a provision requiring unannounced drills, but SB 261 does. I suggest you include that provision in your bill and also make the unannounced drills required, not discretionary, as they are in the Senate bill. I also suggest that you require the oil companies to supply or pay for state-supplied best available technology for cleaning up the oil spills. 2 years ago, during the Glacier Bay spill, the owner of the Glacier Bay said that there's only two types of skimmers that would be adequate to clean up that spill. Neither of them were available in Alaska, in Canada, or in the United States. Considering the scope of oil development in Alaska, it seems that we should have the state-of-the-art technology here so that it can be deployed within a few days while the oil is while it's still useful, before the oil becomes too emulsified and filled with debris to be picked up with the skimmers. And also, I recently got a call from a PhD candidate at the University of Washington School of Fisheries, and he wanted me to pass along his thoughts that there should be a review of not just the economic and ecological impacts from this spill, but also the cultural and social impacts, and that should be included in any assessment of future oil development, is what the development and potential spills, what the impact of those could be on Alaskan, the social and cultural impacts of that. And lastly, I'd like to say that I support the increased civil penalties in HB 293 and SB 271, and I support Joint Resolution 32. I don't think Bristol Bay is appropriate for development considering the richness of the fisheries resource there. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Beth, this is Mike Davis. Just a couple of comments. You know, if you have some more detailed comments on these contingency plans, we'd appreciate getting those. They are all under review as you probably legislature. But we, you know, in addition to the state of Alaska, there's a number of other oil and gas states that are also looking at their contingency plans. So there is a lot of ongoing research that's going to be taken by the university, by the state of Alaska, by the legislative research agency. So if you can provide the information to us so we can pass it on, we appreciate it. Thank you for testifying tonight.
You're welcome. I'll be in touch. Thank
you very much. I will come back shortly to Anchorage. Next, I would like to go to Asaya Bates and Homer, please.
Yes, thank you very much. I have really enjoyed all the comments and projections that have been made relating to this disaster. And I hope that we, as a people, do not let it separate us, more so that we come together in a bond of love and friendship and get the oil cleaned up and take action to formulate a highly intelligent plan of action to carry out a preventative measure. And I have one suggestion for you. The brother that gave the talk, Charles Coensberg, that was an excellent and a beautiful projection on this whole problem. And I would like to suggest that the governor talk to this brother, and if he will accept the position, that he be appointed as a life and oil control czar of the state of Alaska, and that he be given the authority to formulate a plan of action that is directed toward life and the prevention of disasters in our state. So thank you very much, and we do love all of you folks.
I Is there anyone else who would like to testify at this time in Homer? Mr. Bates was the last one on my list.
That's everyone here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I would like to come here to Juneau and Mr. Holloway, please. If you would, state your name for the record, please.
Mike Holloway. I'm from Indian, Alaska, just outside of Anchorage. I represent Alaska Friends of the Earth, an environmental organization, which is a volunteer group. I've spent a lot of time in Western Prince William Sound and was able to overfly the sound about 8 days following the disaster. And like many others, have been dismayed at the havoc wrought in the sound. I was also involved in some early attempts to try to get booming material to boom off certain areas like Port Nellie One. We were totally struck out on that. I think it's areas like that in calmer waters that could have been protected, but you're now heavily damaged with their oil. In general, I think that it's been shown that there's a great inadequacy of the response cleanup, the technology available for cleanup, and I think that these should be adequately addressed in legislation. I would certainly caution to take a careful watch at legislation and not pass knee-jerk legislation, but to hold town meetings or workshops about the state and go at this in a careful manner. It seems to me the people that feel most outraged are those who believe the oil company's statements. We've testified for many years that we didn't think the cleanup was available. We have been and remain against the development of any oil base in Bristol Bay, and that support the efforts others have mentioned to monitor properly captains and crews on tankers. They should be monitored through their passage by pilots, and if this had been monitored even by the Coast Guard after they gave a permission to change their course to a collision course, it perhaps could have been avoided. I think that adequate taxes should be provided by the oil companies for cleanup contingencies, and that there definitely should be someone in command immediately instead of what we've seen. Some of our members have gone to Seward to try to help with the bird cleanup, and I think it's a travesty that there is no otter center in Seward at this time, and there remains bickering over whether or not there will be one. When she was there, there were efforts to, they were told to leave the otters in the water, to not pick them up in Resurrection Bay or Kenai Fjord, and I think that all efforts should be made to rescue and save what animals are possible. I think that there should be an adequate funding of agencies such as DEC, as other people have spoken to. Oil is one of the many hazardous substances that we face, and this is certainly an acute spill, but there's also a chronic leakage of oil into the marine environment. We need long-term studies. There have been many statements about how short-term an effect this will be. This will be a lasting effect on Prince William Sound the rest of our lives. And I certainly hope that you can adequately fund the university and other people to study those effects and take any actions possible to prevent further such spills. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Holloway.
Yeah,
Representative Davis.
Mr. Holloway, we've been trying to gather all the research we can, but you know, there's certainly quite a bit of information about some of the other major spills and the fact that you know, there's impact even 10 years later, and we certainly, at least some members of the legislature, realize the impact's going to be around for a long time. But there'll be a number of hearings on this over the summer. I don't think you're going to see the legislature move real quickly on this, but I think there will be a number of hearings over the summer, so thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to return to Anchorage and Ms. Libby Roderick, please.
Hi, my name is Libby Roderick, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you. I'm a lifelong Alaskan myself. I've been here 30 years, and my main concern tonight, I guess, is that this, the tragedy that we've been going through, not getting normalized, that people not adjust to this as something normal in any way, and I know that some people are already beginning to do that just because it's so overwhelming. In my life, this is the worst thing that has ever happened to Alaska. Outdoes the earthquake by a long shot. And it is the bottom line, absolutely. I can't imagine anything worse that could happen. If we're going to make changes, we're going to do it now, or we're going to start sinking into denial. I think we need to retain the original sense of shock that we have at the spill, at what didn't happen around the spill, even for those of us who didn't trust the oil companies to be taking care of the environment. It's still an incredible shock. I was called by a friend of mine who used to live in Alaska from California, who simply all could say to me was that we are actually killing the planet. Are we not? And I couldn't answer other than that, yeah, we are, it looks like. So I guess what I'm concerned about is just the mentality that we not start getting numbed out by bureaucratic language or economic language or any other kind of language in addressing this, but stick with the long-term economic, basic, simple, common sense that economically the basic criteria we have to use for anything in this state has to be measured against whether it is sustaining the source, which is the planet, the way the natives do it, which is that you don't do anything that will harm something seven generations away. That's their definition of sustainability. And for people who can't see this, at least we can see that it's suicidal for Alaska to wreck its own tourism-based, recreation-based, fishing-based, et cetera. And I think a lot of people are seeing that. And fortunately, the people on the committee that I know are the type of real leadership that is going to see that what real leadership right now is in Alaska is making sure that we act while there is still time. One thing I wanted to say is I've heard that Exxon is being able to determine whether or not certain volunteers are used, and it seems to me that that's like placing a child molester in charge of, you know, the healing of their victim. And I don't see why Exxon should be allowed to determine who is used to help the animals. I also would like to urge you to repeal ELF, urge you to ensure that there is adequate oil spill prevention legislatively, urge you to prevent oil drilling in Bristol Bay to the extent that you can, to consider the recycling of plastics like they are doing in Minnesota, and to make sure that House Bill 68, that makes sure that the polluters pick up the tab, goes through. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Roderick. Next, Kathy Carlson, please.
Hi, my name is Kathy Carlson, and I've lived in Alaska for 9 years. With the oil spill, Pandora's box is being opened. No amount of money can fix it. No amount of spraying the beaches can return them to their once pristine state. No amount of crime will replenish the sea life. No amount of legislation can keep it from happening again. As long as we continue to drill for, transport, and use oil, we will continue to poison all the life on this earth. There's only one ray of hope, and that is that man has the capacity to learn from his mistakes. And this is my hope. I would like to see the legislature introduce legislation that would take 25% of all the revenue the state receives from oil and invest it in research, development, and implementation of alternative, clean, non-poisonous, non-radioactive alternative energy, wind, solar, and water. I believe that if we have the direction and the commitment to develop these alternative energy sources, then instead of selling oil, Alaska could soon sell and export alternative energy technology. When the United States was behind in the space race in 1960, John Kennedy made a commitment that we were going to land a man on the moon by 1970, and we did it in 1969. And I feel that Alaska could do the same thing with energy. I think that we should add alternative energy classes to our schools, have science fairs with alternative energy themes on all levels of education. Some things that we would have to return to the Stone Age to do without oil, but this just isn't so. We have been dependent on oil for only the last 100 years. The experts say we have only 50 years of oil left. We have to find another way to deal with our energy needs by then. Why not do it now? Tomorrow may be too late. And the other thing I wanted to say that there's a company that it's called Safety Incorporated that's here in town that had a product that they've tried through Alaska, through the governor's office, through lieutenant governor's office. It's called Petrolock. It's supposedly an inert material. I saw a sample that they had that was in a bag of crude oil. This is in the first days after the spill that had been treated with the substance. All these companies done all their experimentation on salt water and crude. And what I saw
were never, their calls to DEQ were never returned, and there's supposedly 25,000 pounds of this stuff in New York just waiting for something to use it on. And I think that the thing should be checked into. It may be too late for this spill, unfortunately, but maybe there's the next one. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. Next, Tom LaCoja, please.
My name is Tom Losh, that's spelled L-A-K-O-S-H. I'm a resident of Whittier, and I've been circulating a petition calling for the booming of Port Neliwan and Port Wells. Many people have signed it, particularly the pot shrimp fishermen, the drag shrimp fishermen of the area. Every city council member of Whittier has signed it, and the city council passed a resolution to have the city manager signed it for the city of Whittier. Princess Tours has signed it. Brad Phillips, the tour agency, Phillips Tours has signed it. And it specifically requests that oil be excluded from the Port Wells, Port Neliwan area. I am also presently a plaintiff in a suit requesting a temporary restraining order and a preliminary injunction to have Exxon Shipping and Alyesta Pipeline Company provide funds for the booming and cleaning of those areas. While Exxon officials were lying to Judge Ripley to prevent the protection of these areas, oil was actually coming into those areas as early as April 9th. Jim O'Brien made an affidavit, sworn affidavit on April 11th, saying that the McClure Bay area was not threatened when indeed there had been oil in the area for 2 days prior to it. Either he was totally uninformed and incompetent in providing for spill abatement, or he was deliberately lying to the judge to prevent protection of the area. On Friday the 14th, attorney for Exxon Jim Reeves was stating that there was skimming equipment and booming operations going on within the Port Neliwan area, and a report by Kevin Delaney of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game the previous day said there were no skimmers in the area nor booming operations going on. There were some booms placed on the shore, but there were no skimming and concurrent booming operations going on in the Port Neliwan area. And the subsequent overflight on Saturday the 15th showed that there was no booming operations or skimming operations in the areas. The Exxon company is deliberately lying to protect their monetary interests. I would also suggest that some action be taken to prevent any further oil from entering the Port Neliwan, Port Wells area, and that the oil that has already entered the Port Neliwan area be cleaned up immediately to protect the wilderness area as has been designated. It's actually an acting wilderness area prior to approval by the United States Congress as a permanently designated wilderness area. All other economic uses, degradatory economic uses of the area have been excluded, and an environmental impact statement is required for all and degradatory environmental uses for the area, and we want to know why Exxon has not provided one to use this proposed wilderness area as a dumping ground for their oil. Other suggestions might be that booming material of sufficient strength, seagoing boom, be placed on tankers along with power skiffs to deploy the boom from the tanker should there be a spill. Yes, and there is also a report of new oil that was spilled from the tanker when it was dislodged from the rocks, at least 300,000 gallons, and we'd like to know why that has not been reported to the public. That was reported by persons on vessels cleaning up the area. Also, another suggestion is to provide bladders on the tankers so that in case of the spill, the injured tanks can be pumped into these bladders. And also that the tanks on the ship be provided with safety valves to create a vacuum above the oil so that oil cannot leak from the bottom of the vessel. Thank you very much for the time allotted.
Thank you very much, Mr. LaCoja.
Thank you.
sir, we have three more people here in Anchorage. One is Mr. Dennis Victor.
Okay, before I continue in Anchorage, I would like to make the rounds over anywhere else in the network who has not yet testified. And are there any other people anywhere tied into the bridge here on this teleconference who have people at their sites who would like to testify? Thank you very much. Okay, we'll go back to Anchorage, please. And if you would, give us the names of the three people who remain.
Yes, sir. One is Dennis Victor. And the other two is, the other one is a Michael Comby and a Kathy Carey.
Mr. Victor, if you would, please continue.
I'm Denny Victor. I've lived in Alaska for over 44 years. When the pipeline was being decided, and well, this is early in the 70s, it was decided to put the port in Valdez. But part of the assurances that everyone had was that there were going to be double-bottom tankers. That's why we can't sell any oil to Alaskan oil to foreign countries, because they'd send in those single-bottom tankers. They were going to have a setup to where they could, they were assuring everyone that they would have the equipment, everything in place to take care of a catastrophic oil spill. And that didn't happen. Now we're getting to the point where they didn't burn it off in the first day, or the second day, or the third day. Then it got windy. And now it's affecting an area that by the time it's done, it will be probably more than the equivalent of the East Coast, where I'm sure they would have done a lot of cleaning faster. As time goes on, the cost effectiveness of cleaning it up is partially taken care of because it's sinking. And when it sinks, obviously there's not enough to clean up. We hear about it's evaporating. Well, evaporating or sinking, it's still there. I think the best idea that anyone had was the Bounty. So far, I've found there are five boats that have a contract with Exxon to pick up oil at $5 a gallon. It seems like that's working, whereas some of the skimmers aren't. I guess my main concern is that I would like my kids 10, 15 years from now to be able to walk on the beaches of Prince William Sound and not step in any oil and be able to see something going on there. I think that when Exxon originally said, yes, we are responsible, we will take care of it, that was fine. Now, since then we've heard, well, we'll do what's reasonable. I want someone that is part of our state to decide what is reasonable. I don't think that the federal government should decide what is reasonable for us up here, because we have a total constituency about the size of Burbank. I don't see any bright side. Not yet. Anyway, that's basically my comments. I think we ought to get on with the job, somehow or other, get things moving. And right now, they're not moving near fast enough a month since the spill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Victor. Mr. Comby, please, if you would.
Okay, hi. This is Michael Comby. I'm in Anchorage, obviously. Thank you for letting me testify today. I just have a few comments, and they mostly have to do with the Senate oil spill bills, because those are what I've been paying attention to. I haven't had time to review what the House has been doing, but I do want, I imagine that there's similar wording in the bills. I just want to say that as far as penalties go for oil spills, the $1,000 per barrel is a real good idea. $2,000 per barrel over barrels filled is there's that's I mean that's a real great idea. The only thing is the Senate bill that pertains to the penalties starts with the 18,000 gallon spill, and I believe that is way too high to start having penalties being imposed. I believe that if we're going to impose penalties, they should start with the first gallon spilled. That same bill also calls for as low a penalty as $500 under an 18,000 gallon spill, and I believe that also should not be passed by either house. A fisherman has to pay a fine of $5,000 if they spill a pint of oil in the water and they're caught. I don't believe that oil companies should be getting away with anything less than that. So I hope that these penalties do apply for the first gallon spilled. I also wonder why these bills are only covering navigable water spills. I believe that they should also cover spills that happen on land, including spills that happen through the pipeline. One important part of the Senate legislation is the suspension and reimposition of the fee. I believe that we shouldn't be asking the oil companies to be paying a fee and then telling them that a certain dollar amount is all we want from them. I believe that now the cost of doing business in Alaska is going to be a little bit more, and the 5 cents per gallon tax or fee, whatever you want to call it, is not too much to ask. I believe that we should make it a permanent fee, not one that is suspended and then reimposed at some future time. I believe that 5 cents per gallon is not that much to ask. Also, I believe that mandatory public review should be included in any of these plans, and I hope that the plan that's devised does come back to the public once it's in place, or before it's in place. Thank you very much for letting me testify.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate your comments. Our final person tonight will be Kathy Carey. Would you please continue, Ms. Carey?
Pardon? My name is Kathleen Carey. Am I good to go here? Okay. A few comments I'd like to make. I think it's extremely important at this time that we see an independent team of scientists and legal people and people appropriate to the team to study the effects of the oil spill, which is separate from the state, federal, or oil interests. In other words, an independent group of people needs to be set up immediately to study the effects of the spill and have no allegiance to the state, federal, or oil interests. That needs to be done immediately. We need not worry about keeping our skirts clean. It's quite obvious that there's going to be fingers pointed in all directions, but we need a complete review of this, and we need it clearly not from the state, federal, or oil interests. In addition, I'd like to see that the state appoint appropriate legal counsel other than someone out of the Attorney General's office. It's become eminently obvious that the oil companies are retaining some of the best attorneys in the United States to defend themselves in this claim. Why we are going to give individuals a learner's permit to be attorneys, I find this unacceptable. I do not want any junior LA law people taking this over. I want to hire the best and to win this case. I am not interested in some individual out of law school or with a few years of practice making his poor reputation in the state of Alaska by losing this case. At this point, we will lose this case because the AG's office seems hell-bent on losing it for us. We need to get good people. Melvin Bell, I came here because he could see the dollar signs. I think the state of Alaska should be at least as wise. Steve Cooper's an attorney. He should use his head. I want to see the ELF repealed. I think the rest of the people in the state of Alaska want to see the ELF repealed. And I want to see honor brought back to the Alaska State Legislature. At this point, I think most people that are sitting there have taken oil
I'm going to close, but I will remember each and every one of you. Thank you very much.
Representative Davis, do you have a comment?
Sir, we have one more participant, and that's the last from Anchorage.
Okay, if you would please state your name for the record, and go ahead, Anchorage, please.
Hey, my name is Jeff Butler. I'd just like to say that the plan for the Prince William Sound cleanup, Exxon's plan, is not available to the public at this time, and it, it should be made available for public review, like at libraries. The plan, as submitted to the Coast Guard, it's been requested by the to the Coast Guard, and still has been. It's they say that it's an Exxon private document, and that. That should be made public so that we can see what Exxon is doing. They should be certainly accountable to the public for exactly what they're doing to clean it up. Thank you.
Huh? Thank you very much. Representative Davis, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, we have some members from the DEC here, and he indicated that document is public, and we can make that available tomorrow. So. We'll get it shipped up to the Anchorage LAO, and it'll be available. And just a comment that I want to make a comment to Kathy. There's certainly a number of legislators that aren't endowed by the oil companies and have been sort of fighting against some of the things that they have been standing for, or some of their positions. I do appreciate the fact that that there's going to be greater oversight over the oil and gas industry. It's been sometimes an uphill battle to try to get some good practices in place here, and so we appreciate the people that have come out and testified tonight, and people that have contributed their testimony, and I think we'll pass on that information to the other members that weren't able to be here. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. I'd like to also thank everyone for their comments tonight. We've had some excellent suggestions, some very helpful remarks, and I think we've heard in true Alaskan fashion what we Alaskans plan to do and should be doing to ensure that our environment as well as our futures are intact. I'd like also to thank once again Lieutenant Governor McAlpine for having sat through the evening, and if you would please, if you have additional remarks that you would like to send to the committee, this will not be hurried by this committee, and we will do all that we can to ensure that your concerns and your efforts are not ignored. So thank you very much for participating in this teleconference, and with that, I adjourn this resources meeting at 9 o'clock. Thank you.